Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. What a pleasure it is to be doing the book launch for The Horsewoman. And I'm going to have to ask, because I think I know the answer, but in case I'm wrong, is this the first collaboration between you and Mr. Lupica, Jim?
This is the first, but not the last.
Wonderful news. Well, a question I've been wanting to ask you, but let me just pause and say, I don't think I need to introduce James Patterson, or I could go on for hours about all his awards and successes and all the wonderful charitable things he does.
Please do.
Thank him for for the support that he shows for independent bookstores and booksellers every year with his very generous grants, which are fabulous. He came to us from advertising, which I've always remembered. And Jim, you've really been brilliant at applying, I think, so much of what you know. You knew as a major figure in advertising.
Don't bring up that advertising thing. As I've said before, I've been clean for 30 years now. Come on, Barbara.
Nevertheless, you introduced techniques to bookselling that I think really revolutionized it in lots of ways. I've always been extremely impressed by them. I should say that Mr. Patterson was awarded the 2019 National Humanities Medal, and the National Book Foundation has presented him with a Literarian Award, which I hadn't heard of before, but yay, for outstanding service to the American literary community. He's also won an Edgar and 9 Emmys. Mike Lupica is a veteran sports columnist, and we've gotten to know him very well over the last few years because among all his other talents, he's also writing in the Robert Parker universe. He's a member of the National Sports Media Association Hall of Fame. He's been a panelist on ESPN, The Sports Reporters, and he's written 16 New York Times bestsellers, and he's hilarious. Damn. He is so funny. One of the things I've loved working with Mike this year, and he has other cool friends besides James Patterson, and one of them is Carl Hyacin. So what Carl said about, where did I find it? I think I quote, here we go. He says, Carl Hyacin writes about The Horsewoman. It's a natural for famed sports writer Lupica to pair up with Patterson for more than a thriller. It's an eye-opening ride through the high-stakes world of equestrian show jumping. Patterson and Lupica make a great team, riding at full gallop and with faultless timing of the lives of three fearless women connected by blood, competition, and a passion for fast horses. Now, he doesn't mention the absolute shit that you two created as the villain in this book, but I would like to say that Mr. Gorton ranks right up there as somebody I was hoping would ride for a fall. Which one of you created Mr. Gorton?
We create everything together. We know him, though. We know him. He's a Palm Beacher.
You mean he refers
he's
to
a him. Real guy, yeah. Yeah. We're not gonna reveal who he is, but
well, one of the things I learned, Jim, reading this book is that a real Palm Beacher refers to it as the island. So that's for the really group at Palm Beach.
As opposed to West Palm, where Mike lives, which is kind of...
No, that's just simply not true. That's not true.
It's not what? True. We write fiction.
So one of the things that will immediately catch your eye when you get your copy of The Horsewoman, and I want to mention also that Jim and Mike have very kindly signed book plates together. So in one book plate, both signatures, which come with all of our copies, in case you want to order one, is the dedication that Mike makes. He says, this book could not have been written without Taylor and Hannah Lupica, mother and daughter, whose love for show jumping and for each other informs every page of our book. So I guess a question, Mike, for me, and it was one I've never really asked Jim, because you do so many projects, Jim, with so many different authors. Do sometimes authors bring them to you, or are they all generated by you?
Pretty much everything starts with me. I mean, Mike and I, we actually met in a bar, and we were going to talk about stuff. And here's the funny story. We had just sat down in the bar, and this woman comes running across the bar, and I think her name was Sharon, and she's like got this beatific smile on her face. And she goes, you are my favorite writer. I love you. I read everything that you've ever written. But she's talking to Mike. And I don't even think she knew who I was, which is so insulting. And then after she leaves, Mike called his agent, Esther Newberg, and told her the story about what had just happened. And then he called his friend, Larry David, and the same story. And then when he's done calling people, he looked at me and he said, you need me. That's how we got together. It was kind of like that, yeah.
Hey, by the way, Barbara, he says, I think her name was Sharon. No. He knows her name was Sharon. It's burned into his memory and his imagination. And he's only brought it up, I don't know, 500 or 600 times.
I have nightmares about Sharon. You know, there was another quote, which is interesting. And you mentioned Mike's wife and his daughter, Louise Penny, who's a wonderful writer. And she said, I thought this was kind of sexist, but it's wonderful. She says, Patterson and Lupica managed to get deep into the world of high level show jumping. And also incredibly for two men, how could she say that? Deep into the lives of three generations of strong women. And as Mike and I have said, the reason for that, I think, and Mike agrees, is that we are incredibly in love with our wives. And I think that's why we can, you know, we could write about the women in the book.
That's wonderful.
I told Jim one time, that something my old friend Bill Parcells said to me when he first met Taylor Lupica completely applies to Sue Patterson. After we had dinner, he called me the next morning and he said, "You overmarried," and hung up. And I said, yeah. And he's been dining out on that. And I said, but it perfectly describes where Jim and I are with our wives.
That's wow. True. So how could you write a guy that is as miserable to women, in fact, everybody, as Mr. Gordon? Is this the way, you know, I won't even ask you why you do it.
Every story requires at least one hero and one villain, okay? And as Jim always says, you don't just throw the kitchen sink. You throw everything, you hear the expression, throw everything except the kitchen sink. Jim says, no, we throw the kitchen sink too. So this is a very bad guy who's like every bad rich guy that we've ever met. He's every rich sports owner I ever met. And I wanted to take him and put him in our world, knowing that Becky and Maggie and the grandmother, that he had met their match in these three women. Because the thing that Jim and I love about The Horsewoman, at its heart, this is a mother-daughter story. Mm-hmm. But it's so fun listening to the reaction, because people, it's a thriller. It's a family novel. It's a novel set in show jumping. It's all of this stuff. But at its heart are two women who love each other, but they love horses too, and they love winning.
And Barbara, interesting thing about the show jumping is that it's the only sport in the Olympics where men and women compete against each other in the same event, and also 60-year-olds compete against 20-year-olds. So it's a really fascinating sport. But it also, and one of the things that brings suspense to it is because ultimately we have these two women competing to see who will go to the Paris Olympics, the mother and daughter, which is interesting in itself. And people will find themselves rooting for one or the other or for both of them, which adds to the suspense. But the other thing about this sport is it's like gymnastics or those sports where one screw up and you're done. And that's part of the suspense of this thing. One little mess up and you're heartbroken, you're out, and so it really does, it is a thriller with a lot of emotion.
Could I add that it's also a team, isn't it? I mean, it's a team that wins.
They're individuals, and Mike can tell,
all right.
Ultimately, there's only one person on the horse. They have trainers. They have grooms. They have an incredible support system, but when they're in the ring, they're in the ring alone, and they are competing against the clock, against all of these jumps, and so often. And I think one of the things I love about what we've done, they're competing against their own emotions. It's a roller coaster ride, literally from jump to jump. I've been watching my daughter ride since she was 10 years old. Jim knows this. We have pictures of me that people have taken with me watching her that I didn't know I was being photographed. And I'm hiding behind trees. I'm poking my head above. It's hideous. I make a fool of myself because and the other thing, Barbara, is when Hannah's in the ring, I actually feel she can hear the things I'm muttering to her. I've convinced myself that she can hear me talking to her. But it is an incredibly tense sport. And Jim is 100% right. You know, when you're watching figure skating, say at the Olympics, or gymnastics, you know that the next move is the one that could wipe out years of training, and you feel like your heart's in your throat the whole time. That's what this sport is like.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Little Brown, for pretty much all my books, they'll go out and get advanced readers. And in this case, 100% of the advanced readers gave this book 5 stars or 4 stars. And that has never happened for any of the books I've ever done. And I think it's partly because the suspense is wonderful and there is so much emotion.
There is. Also, we haven't mentioned the grandmother, because I think it's actually about all three women. And since I'm more relating to the grandmother at this stage in my life, I thought she was a wonderful character. You know, I mean, she's kept together her stables and her dreams, despite all sorts of, financial hardship and other difficulties, and inspired her daughter and then her granddaughter, who is the, as we start the book, the granddaughter is the kind of the rebel, you know, doesn't necessarily want to further her grandmother and her mother's ambitions, but there she is. So, you know, it is a mother-daughter story, but I often think it's a three generation story as well.
Barbara, one thing Jim and I kept in mind the whole time is that my writing table's over here. And when we're working on a book, I've got a few index cards for what I call Pattersonism right there. And one of them is stakes. Stakes are important. Every kind of book Jim writes, stakes are important. And the stakes for the grandmother are different than the stakes for Becky and her mom in this book, because, you know, we're not gonna try to spoil too much of the story, but grandma's got some skin in the game because she's trying to hold on to her farm. So she needs a gold medal winning horse.
Well, she does, but I mean, she's also the one that makes it possible to have acquired the horse for her daughter, Maggie. Right. She's had to enter in a kind of a bargain with the devil, because she can't afford the cost of a great racing horse. You know, Mike, talk to us a little bit about how much money is involved in this world, because I mean, it's a really—
Too much, too story. Much. I said to Jim the other day that the horsewoman is in my mind, one of the ways that show jumping can start giving back to Mr. Lubica, because Hannah's now been in it now for 13 years. No, it's extremely expensive. And these horses that end up in the Olympics, say the horse that Jessica Springsteen rode in Tokyo, these are horses that cost $1 million or $2 million dollars. I said to Hannah one time, Daddy loves you very much, but obviously Mr. Springsteen loves Jessica more, because he's spending a lot more money on horses than Daddy is.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I mean, I assume you would if you could, but—
But the horse, but Barbara, the thing is, the horse, you as great a rider as you can be, you gotta be a horse. It's like in thoroughbred racing, you can be the greatest jockey in the world, but if you don't have a horse, then you're nowhere. And that's, Jim, I think that's one of the things that comes through with this book, right?
Well, the love of the horses, and the two horses are characters too, Sky and Coronado. They each have a horse. And you know, in that respect, there's a little of The Horse Whisperer, which I loved as a book and a movie, in this thing. And even on some level, Seabiscuit. The horses are real characters, real characters. And the way the two women, you know, respond to their horses and love their horses and need their horses, you know, it's an interesting, those are interesting relationships as well.
So it's not a single rider. In fact, it's the rider and the horse together that are the competition. If the horse isn't up for the rider, or the rider isn't up for the horse, that makes it different than an ice skater. I mean, if you're an ice skater, you're out there, or a diver or whatever it is, it's just you, right?
These are very big, fast, strong animals. And at its best, the rider and the horse are in perfect sync. But if the rider's having a bad day, the horse, Hannah Lubica would tell you, the horse knows that. And often it is not horse error, it's pilot error that can be the difference between winning and losing. And it's part of the drama of the sport. Again, every jump could be a disaster, or it could be a triumph.
Well, and the Olympics are a tough grading system, but you know, you're speaking to a woman who has read every Dick Francis book, whether written by Mary or Dick is not really the question. So you know, there's a lot you can learn about horses, but I think yours is a more vivid relation. The relationship between the rider and the horse, I think, is very powerful. And I don't remember Dick writing about it, or Mary, as it was, in quite the same way. I mean, he wrote thrillers too that were based on horses or
other things.
Mm-hmm. But I had actually, it's so interesting for me because my roommate, I went off to Stanford when I was only 17 from Chicago, and Palo Alto was like a whole foreign world to me. And even more interesting was that my roommate from Monterey, whose father actually did have that kind of money, brought a horse and stabled it at Stanford. And she was interested in the Olympic trials and in fact rode in the Olympic trials. And so, you know, every day she would put on the whole gear and down to the stable and the whole bit. And I was just enthralled by that. It was the first time I'd really encountered the horse world. It was dressage that she was, I think, so good at. Are all Olympic events dressage, Mike?
No, there's the jumping events that my daughter is competing in. That's what Jessica and Laura Kraut and the rest of the American team did in the Olympics. And it's funny. Again, the first time Jim ever and I ever got together, that's the thing that intrigued him. Women against men, young against old, same ring, same event, okay?
We had started talking about baseball and football and whatever, and then Mike started talking about his wife and daughter and the horse race or the horse world, and I said I find that more interesting. And we originally were thinking maybe as a young adult, and then I said, no, I think this is really an adult novel. I think we can really do something. And there's love interest in this. There's a wonderful trainer, and there's a phone. That must be, who would that be? President Clinton? Sorry about that. No, it's mine. Sorry.
We've got a love interest. We got a cool dad lawyer who's kind of a superhero.
Yeah.
And a character, Jim read a long piece about Kevin Babington in the Times. It was a writer who was paralyzed in a very bad accident. And about halfway through the book? And we had a trainer, and I don't think this spoils anything. Gus Bennett is his name. And he ends up in a wheelchair. And he became, once we put this character in the book, it just opened the book up. He became such a strong, feisty, snarky a character, but it started when Jim decided we were going to put him in the chair.
Yeah, it is a fun book. And our job, by the way, Barbara, for Poison Pen and ourselves, is that everyone watching this will however it works, and go to Poison Pen or write to you guys, however you sell books, and we'll be disappointed if everyone watching doesn't want to read this book. We will not have done our job.
There it is. It's absolutely wonderful. And I agree that it works on so many levels. But let's talk a little bit about not Gus, but the other guy in the book who's so important to training. Because I think his story, I don't want to spoil anything by recounting.
Daniel?
Yeah, I think he's a wonderful character. And, you know, and it's he's another person at risk. You know, it doesn't help to just have like one person at risk, I think, in a book like this. He's definitely at risk.
Yeah, he is at risk from the government.
Is the government is considering reporting. And you know, which we run into that a lot in Florida, obviously. And he's very good at what he does, and he loves Becky on some level. But you know, so that throws another bit of suspense into our tale. Is Daniel gonna survive this? And you know, will he get to see, you know, whatever's gonna happen, whoever's gonna wind up at the Paris Olympics?
Well, that's very, very true. But I think his role as motivator is really a very powerful one in the book, because you know Becky doesn't really want to step into this role. I'm not, you know, how much of it is Becky not sure of her own skill, and how much of it is that she just doesn't want to cave into her grandmother?
I think it's all of that, but at the end of the day, she is torn between what her talent and what she wants. It's I think somebody says it in the book, it's a collision of her dreams against her mother's dreams, because Becky's a good enough writer that maybe there will be other Olympics for her, but there's this sense that this might be her mom's last great shot. And the ticking clock aspect of this, when you're working with Jim, you know that there's one thing to do, and that is propel the story like it's a horse in the ring, okay? And the ticking clock in our book is, are they both going to make it to Paris? Is one of them going to make it to Paris? Or is neither one of them going to make it to Paris? Because from the time we started the book, we just loved the idea that Paris was such a great finish line. I mean, just a great setting. I think that the 2024 Summer Games are supposed to be in Paris, God willing.
Yeah, and we had planned to go there to do some research. Unfortunately, COVID has messed up our whole writing process. But that was part of our treat. It was going to be, but it didn't work out that way.
Well, you do stage a wonderful scene at the end in one of Paris's great restaurants. So was that just kind of wishful thinking, or have you actually been there and were recalling it?
We've been there. We had a very nice, Taylor and I had a trip to Paris when Hannah did her semester abroad, her senior year at Boston College. And we went, she was doing it at Copenhagen, but we spent 4 or 5 days in Paris and just had a blast and did all the things you're supposed to do. And at that time, I didn't know that was going to be material for a book, but it became, you know, it's always nice to have seen the places you're writing about in your books. And Sue Patterson and Taylor Lupica, I think, Jim, were very, very, very positive about us going to Paris to do further research.
They were, they were big on that. Yeah, we Sue and I love Paris too. Who doesn't?
Well, so often people wind up at the Tour d'Argent, but I thought that you did, brought us to, I'm trying to remember, let me go back. You brought us to a different restaurant, and then not everybody behaves with the decorum that this particular restaurant would like to see its customers behave in, right? So did you behave like that, or did you was that wishful thinking, Mike?
No, it's...
You kind of want to act up in some of those restaurants, but you hold it in.
Right, L'Atelier de Joël Robuchon, right? So Joël Robuchon is a famous Michelin press. I'm married to a man whose idea of trip planning is to fax ahead, or now email ahead, to any 3-star Michelin restaurant he can find. On our first trip to France, we ended up in near Lyon at Trois Gros, and goes from there. So I can well understand why it would be so much fun to end up with Joël Robuchon. So one of the things I thought was very powerful at the beginning of the book is your depiction of how it must feel to have a horse crash down on you. I hope, Mike, that actually isn't an experience that your daughter has had.
It is not, Barbara. I mean, she's crashed into jumps. You know, everybody has their collisions with the course at some point. But no, I spoke to riders. And I won because, again, another one of the little notes on my table is be there. That's a very big Pattersonism, be there. And so I talked to riders and they literally said you felt like the sky had fallen on you. And all of a sudden you can't breathe. And in that moment, you don't know how badly you're hurt. You know you're hurt, but you don't know how badly you're hurt, and you're not gonna know how badly you're hurt until you come out from under the horse.
We won't get into where or why that happens.
Right.
Well, I mean, so what does a horse weigh? What is an average horse like the horse in the book? I mean, how many, is it 1,000 pounds more?
I think it's more, yeah, right?
I think it's more, yeah. I've forgotten, I don't have, Hannah Lupica here to do my
check our facts. Yeah,
it's a lot.
So you would feel like the sky had fallen on you if you were under. And I thought it was particularly interesting that you said that the hardest part was to try to breathe with this weight on you. That, you know, it reminds me, what was that old torture, you know, where they used to put, you know, weights on your chest, Elizabethan torture, so gradually you suffocated. And I thought, wow, This is kind of an accidental version of that. This is not a gory book, may I just say, that there are no scenes of outright torture or maiming or whatever it all is. But
I wanted them, but Mike wouldn't go along with it.
Well, you do have to imagine what it would be like to have this horse fall on you. Right. So
not telling too much, very early in this book, it's fair to say, Jim, there's an accident that informs everything that happens going forward in the book.
Well, it's right at the beginning. I didn't think it was a spoiler.
And a horse, one of our riders goes out for a trail ride one day and the horse comes back without her. And that's
always a sinister moment, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
we always like that. We like that image of the horse coming back without the rider. And again, it just begins this incredibly, I keep saying ride, but that's what this book is, a ride. But we keep coming back to this. This is about, as great as the grandmother is, this is about this relationship, this incredibly complicated relationship between this mother and the daughter, both of them wanting to be champions and knowing what a lot of champions find out in sports, it comes with a cost.
And as you said, Barbara, it is a combination of, like with Becky, about part of it is she feels this is her mother's time, and part of it is she's afraid.
Yeah.
She doesn't know. She doesn't know how good she is.
And I'm not sure that she is really motivated to find out until she has to.
And her mom has come close to the Olympics in the past. She's had heartbreaking moments coming close to the Olympics and not making it.
Well, actually, my Sue, she's a swimmer. And Sue went to the Olympic trials twice, my Sue. So she's got that Olympic dream as well. And, she was a four-time All-American swimmer at Wisconsin. So she's big on the whole sports side too, yeah.
Your timing is interesting with the Winter Olympics coming up in Beijing and all the, questions surrounding it about health protocols and who's sending who and whatever. I'm glad that you projected this one ahead to Paris in 24, so you don't have to think about that. Let's talk for a moment about how you tell this story, because you have multiple points of view, which I thought are really fascinating. And I think I counted at least six.
I had never done a book like that. And once Jim said, we cannot tell this story from one point of view. There's too much going on in this book. And so it's Becky, it's Daniel, it's Maggie, it's Gus, it's everybody. And I think it's very, from my end of it, from my side of it, it's just extremely liberating. He knows how to do it. I had mostly written, Jesse Stone's a tight third person, Sonny Randall's first person. So I stayed in my lane.
And it's just so much more fun to be out of the
lane. We're getting out of that lane.
We want to know the rules and then break them.
Well, I think the story works because you are inside the head of so many people as you go, even the evil Mr. Gordon, and being inside his head reveals to you that he doesn't actually think he's evil.
We're watching movies all the time where it's going from one point of view to another and following a character. And I think it's a very, I think the book flows nicely. You don't get lost, the drama, and that's a big thing with us about transitions. Mike and I just had a big talk about transitions with Taylor involved.
Why don't you tell?
No,
tell.
We won't get into that one. That's another book. But that's a big thing in terms of keeping a book flowing, keeping the drama going, keeping the ride. And we do want it, right from the beginning. I mean, this book takes off like a fast racehorse would, and it continues that way all the way through, I think.
I think it does too. And I think because you're telling it from different points of view, there are things that we, the reader, knows reading those different sections that the other characters don't necessarily know. So I think, I think there's a lot of fun for the reader in feeling like they have a bit of inside knowledge, that isn't shared, that you pick up while you're reading it. Is that you use that before, Jim. I mean, your last Alex Cross book, I thought was really amazing. I loved your Out into the Wilderness part and all, but me too. Uh-huh.
That was fun. The idea of getting Alex and Samson out in the wilderness, and it was, on a canoe and a whole ball. Yeah, that was, I liked that idea. I thought that would be a lot of fun. And I haven't done anything like that in the Cross series.
No, you haven't. But at the same time, in the alternate story, you're in Paris once again. Paris seems to be on your mind.
Yeah. No, I can't get enough. Yeah, it's, but you know, the thing of it is Mike and I, and we kind of did this book during COVID, and you know, one of the things, you know, our wives would lock us in our offices and not let us out. And I have a little, in my door, there's a little doggy thing. It's a cat thing to let the cat in. And so she would slip food in there.
You get food from your wife? Huh, really?
What, you're locked in your office and there's no like catering door or whatever?
No, it doesn't work that way. I'll get up sometimes and I'll say to Taylor, I'm not feeling it today. And she'll go, get up. But Jim, one thing that we clearly succeeded in The Horsewoman is Barbara has taken an intense dislike to Steve Gordon.
Yeah, we have. Yes.
No, he's not.
No, we hated him. No, we kept going back to some of the chapters with him, and no, make it worse. Make him make it more obnoxious. Make us hate him. You know, I don't hate him enough in this chapter, so we would rework. We reworked several of the Gordon his chapters.
But one of the reasons I really just like him is that he doesn't even think he's a jerk. He thinks that this is, you know, perfectly okay for him to be like this.
Welcome to the world of the wealthy, you know. Yes, I'm in Palm Beach, and a lot of people are quite fine, but there's also a group of them who are just like this guy. They've done something well, and they think they're geniuses because they did something well and made a lot of money or inherited a lot of money.
Yeah, and maybe a lot of money is never enough. I've run across that sort of philosophy.
No, a lot of money is never enough, Barbara.
Right. Once you have a lot, it's never enough, right? for more. So before we open this up to the audience, let me ask you one other question. You know, could you have set this book anywhere other than Florida? It seems to me that Florida, I mean, I know it's Paris and that's where you're heading.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, yeah. We could have done it on Long Island, I guess.
We could have put it in Kentucky. We could have put it in another part of the state. But, the real setting, Barbara, is the Winter Equestrian Festival, known as WEF down here. And where I'm sitting, I could ride my bike there. So I literally watched my daughter grow up at this particular competition. And so to me, it was like, if I was writing a baseball novel, it would have been like setting it at Yankee Stadium, because
it's a fascinating crowd. I mean, Bill Gates's daughter competes down there, and Bloomberg's daughter competes down there, and Jessica Springsteen competed down there. So it's a fascinating world. And there's polo also out where Mike is. He's sort of like, you know, the really hoity-toity kind of, you know. I was wrong about the island thing, because where he is, it's the equivalent of the island, even though it's in West Palm.
I was just saying no to Mr. Patterson.
But okay. So I overrode you. But I mean, seriously, one of the things I really liked about it is this is a Florida you don't normally read about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought it was really fascinating to see. I mean, we tend to think of coastal Florida, you know, we think of Miami, and we think, well, I mentioned Carl earlier, or Palm Beach, or we're over, you know, on the coast. But this part of Florida is not so often written about. And I thought that really made the book especially interesting.
Palm Beach County is fascinating. It is among other things, it's the biggest agricultural county in the state. And the far western part is really difficult. It's I did a documentary movie, Murder of a Small Town, and part of it is about Belgrade, Florida, which at that point was the number one, the most violent small town in America.
Wow.
In Palm Beach County.
Well, you know, many readers of crime fiction, if they read Carl Hiaasen or Tim Dorsey and all, they tend to think of this kind of zany Florida. You know, and I really like the way that you gave us this new, this different look.
Barbara, the one thing about this sport is obviously, yes, there are Gateses and Bloombergs and in this sport, but what we wanted to do, and I think we succeeded in doing, is we put you in that ring. Mm-hmm. We put you on those horses and we made you know, in a sport that really, you know, I know there have been other novels about show jumping, but I don't think ever one like this. We put you in the ring and we put you up against the clock and we put you up against yourself and the other riders and those jumps.
You did it marvelously. And the family dynamic is absolutely terrific. So, you know, I agree.
You know how it works, Barbara. You need characters that you're interested in and characters you hate. Characters you love and characters you hate, man.
And you also need, and you know, no spoilers here, you also need to present a dilemma that you at the reader at the outset can't figure out how you're ever going to solve.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah,
which
yeah.
I thought you did really brilliantly in this book. So I found myself rooting for more than one person. So, you know, it was like, oh, how's this going to work?
So yeah, were you on Team Becky or were you on Team Maggie? That's what I want to know, Barbara.
I was on both.
Oh, you were?
I was. No, I absolutely was. And Team Grandmother. I'm sorry, Mike, but you've got to remember my age here. I have to relate to her as well. So I thought all of them had, you know, they all had stakes. They were all powerful personalities. And you didn't want any of them to lose, but you can't figure out how they're all going to win. And I thought that you did a brilliant job with that. I really did. So Patrick, why don't we call you up and see if there are people watching this who might like to ask questions. And I forgot, guys, I poured a glass of wine so I could salute you as this is your book launch. And I didn't do it at the outset. So right now I'm drinking a toast to
There's
you.
Some kind of an orange.
A beverage.
And lemonade, yeah.
This is kind of boring seltzer water, but it'll do. yeah, there's all kinds of people watching. A great group of people watching on YouTube and Facebook. And one of the questions, there have been any number, but one of the questions that keeps coming up is, can you go into a little bit more detail about the collaborative process and kind of
behind
the veil?
Perfect. We can actually demonstrate how it works. We'll do this. And we have never done this in such an environment. Bookstore launch is a perfect time. Great. And what Mike and I do is we alternate words or phrases. And it goes something like this. My mother's advice
was for me to ride my horse every day.
Ride Coronado as hard as I could.
And see if I had a feel for him.
No. Ride him in the ring, God damn it. And see if I had a feel for him.
And he had a feel for me.
This is how we screwed up the book.
Okay, wait a minute.
Because it always came back to that.
All right.
Okay. Now I'll read the whole thing just so you get it.
All right, let's do the gold medal scene. Okay, that's a better scene. You want to do the gold medal scene?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Perfect.
Okay, let's do the gold
medal. He wasn't just sharing the gold medal.
He was sharing the Olympic ceremony moment.
With all the athletes.
And all the sports.
When the camera came in close to show them.
Mouthing the words to the anthem.
Yeah, like that. That's how it works. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Have you thought about doing the audiobook that way?
We thought about it and rejected it.
You rejected it. there are a number of people, you know, as is very common these days, who enjoy both of your books via audiobook, you know, the audiobook format. I guess just a general question to both of you. Have you been pleased with the audiobook version of this book so far? Mm-hmm. Have you listened to it?
I have not listened to it. I'm sorry. No, and that's nothing against the audiobook, but I know the goddamn book and how many, you know, I'm not going to listen to it. No, I'm kidding. But I haven't. But I know they're wonderful, but I haven't listened to it. Mike?
No, what I've done, right, I have to, in full disclosure, the audiobook I'm listening to right now, because I sometimes alternate if I know I'm going to be out riding my bike or doing long walks, is Fear No Evil. So I start reading, and then I pick up on the audiobook.
Oh, good one.
So so another.
And I've been listening to the new Jesse Stone. He lied.
I love audiobooks.
I read them. I don't do audiobooks or anything. I read them all. By the way, let me say this. This is the first time I've said this, and I might not ever say it again. Mike is the best writer I have ever worked with. The best. Superstar. And it's weird with the Parker novels that he's taken over. In my opinion, he does better than Parker did with Jesse and who's the woman?
Sonny Randall.
Sonny, yeah. I think his Sonny is better than Parker's. Now we'll see what happens with Spencer. That's the hard one.
But, yeah, the first.
Are you going to write all of them?
No. It was. I have passed the torch on Sonny Randall to Allison Galen, Barbara.
Right.
And I'm going to keep Jesse. I just started a new Jesse, and then my first Spencer will be written in 2022 because Ace has moved on to other projects.
Well, on January 21st, we are going to host Ace here at the store for the 50th Spencer and his last and 10th Spencer. So it'll be interesting.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Let me just say this.
And I believe me, if you were around Patterson and I for 5 minutes, you will know that we are not in the business of blowing smoke at each other. Quite the contrary.
Or any kind of compliment.
The trash talk is endless, whether it's at dinner or on the golf course. Barbara, this experience has been a blast for me. And I tell people all the time, it has been a masterclass in storytelling and how to move a story forward in a way that does what Jim says you must do, which is imagine yourself telling a story to somebody at a table and not wanting them to get up and walk away.
We've talked to many authors who have written with Jim, and all of them say that. And Jim, I was really pleased to see David Ellis's A Book of His Own coming out this summer, because I know that he's written quite a few with you.
Yeah, and, but David's great. David's first book won an Edgar.
It did.
Yeah.
You know, and Mark Sullivan, I know you left a serious mark on him, and he's gone on to, you know, to do other
things.
Clearly, the authors that you have worked with have learned wonderful.
Andrew Gross.
Wonderful things.
They learn nothing. Learn nothing. They'll go out and make the same mistakes they always made. It's ridiculous. No, they're all wonderful. I love them all. I'll tell you what's coming, but I'll get over this really quickly, but coming in June is my autobiography. And I take them all to task.
I saw it. And you know what I loved? I loved the cover because I had to look at it twice to see if that was really you.
Oh, yeah. Me and my beard.
Man, this.
Let me tell you something. You don't put your autobiography and put a picture of you, you know, like right now.
Right.
Take one a little earlier, you know.
I look a little bit like Ben Affleck on the cover there.
I think you'll like it, Barbara. Actually, if you can compete with Cortez Madera, who am I thinking of?
Elaine Petrocelli.
Yeah, Elaine just sent the most wonderful quote. If they give you the book, I want to see an even nicer quote from you, Barbara.
Well, Aaron, I hope you're listening to this, because unless I get a reading copy, I am unable.
No reading copy. Oh,
I don't
no.
have one.
All right, we'll move on to happier stuff here.
Barbara, do you want me to send you mine? I'll send you mine.
Okay, if you'll do that, I will definitely read it, and I will give you an unvarnished quote. How's that?
Okay, perfect.
Come on, Patrick.
The quotes are unbelievable. Patricia Cornwell sent one. Bob Woodward. It's Mike sent one, but yeah, then you know what is he going to say? You know,
Aaron says she's going to send you a copy, Barbara. That's great.
Yeah,
I have a number of people that are weighing in, Jim. About
Aaron. Aaron is writing that she will definitely send me one. Right.
About your books for young readers, Jim. There was a teacher in here that teaches special needs kids and was saying how important the books are to her children. I don't know if there's a specific question there, but a number of people are just saying how much they appreciate your books for young readers.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll keep up with that. I'm sorry, what?
Isn't that under a Jimmy Patterson imprint?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This isn't a Jimmy thing. I told Barbara earlier, this is just a fun thing. We give away Chris money for the Indies for a lot of the people that work there over Christmas. And I got this letter, which is just not as a pat on the back, but it's just a funny letter. And somebody got one of them. She wrote, she said, "Just wanted to express my sincere gratitude for the holiday bonus you've gifted me. As I'm about to begin my paternity leave for our second child, I've already blown it all on diapers and whiskey." And I thought that was wonderful. Very funny, very funny.
And clearly a person who learned from having a first child what really matters.
That's right, that's right.
I love
it. Can you talk a little bit about the book with Dolly Parton that's coming out soon?
Yeah, briefly, but I'm here with the horsewoman, I'm telling you, man. Dolly is gonna take care of herself. She's, in March, Run Rose Run, it's about a country with surprise country and western, but it's one of those things that comes along every 50 years. She's just so good and such a good songwriter. She comes from there's a lot of issues about her past, and one of the interesting things is that, you know, there are songs in the book that go along with the story, and the songs are all very personal to this character. And Dolly went and recorded all of the songs. So we have the book, and then we have literally a soundtrack for the book. There's an album that goes, and it really is the cool. Sue and I went down about 6 weeks ago and listened to the album for the first time. And it's so cool. I mean, to know the story and then to hear the songs. At any rate, but that's enough about Dolly. She'll have to take care of herself in March. But right now I'm with Mike.
Absolutely. We have somebody, I think this is a first, Barbara. We have somebody who's viewing from Mongolia. How cool is that?
Perfect.
Very cool.
How are they going to get a book there?
That's what they were asking. They said it takes a while.
As we have said earlier before this started, we do these events, Jim, in order to reach as many of your readers and Mike readers around the world as we can. It isn't really about book sales for us. We've had people
about book sales for us.
Well, but maybe the Mongolian edition will sell. Come on, take
all right, okay.
We'll take a global view here.
I just wanted to bring up what a great first sentence. The importance of a good first sentence, and you know, even in a horse family, I was the black sheep. What a great first line.
Yeah, I'm glad I wrote it.
Was that yours?
No.
No, that's Mike's voice.
wait, I did have one at the end of that page, which is Becky saying, as we say in show jumping, shit happens.
And you even managed to translate shit happens into another language.
Always with the four-letter words and stuff, it's ridiculous, yeah.
Here, there's a question, it's kind of a broad question from Jacob. He says, and I'm sure you're going to answer this in your autobiography, what inspired you to write stories in the first place, Mr. Patterson?
I grew up in the woods up in upstate New York, and I used to go, I'd go, there weren't a lot of kids around, I would wander through the woods just telling myself stories. And then after I spent time in a mental hospital because I was schizophrenic, I just like writing the stories. And I actually did work in a mental hospital, and James Taylor was a patient there, and Robert Lowell, the poet. And when I was there, I worked a lot of night shifts and started writing stories, you know, because mostly people would sleep. And I don't know, somebody said, you're lucky if you find something you like to do, and then it's a miracle if somebody will pay you to do it. So at that point, I just knew I loved to do it. So, yeah.
Well, let's ask Mike how he became a sports writer. I mean, you're such a fabulous, you know, I love your writing, whatever you're writing, but why did sports attract you, Mike?
Barbara, I started writing about sports for the school paper in high school. I got to Boston College and I was a freshman, and I had written 3 columns for the school paper, The Heights. And somehow one of those columns showed up on the desk of the sports editor of the Boston Globe named Ernie Roberts. And he called me up, he got my number, and he called me up and he said, we were wondering if you'd be interested in writing a piece for the Globe. And I'm thinking, no, I'm extremely busy, Mr. Roberts. Yes, I would like to write a piece for the Globe. I wrote the piece for the Globe. they put it on the front page 2 days later. And from that moment on, it was clear what I wanted to do. And fortunately, I've been able to do something I love. And it's a good thing because I really have no other skills, Barbara. You know, if the writing thing goes
south. The chair isn't goth, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I never counted television, Jim, because if I could be on a TV show that long, anybody can. But no, I Bill Goldman said something to me once. All I ever wanted to do was tell my stories. Jim feels the same way. I grew up in upstate New York. We both went to Catholic colleges, I guess it was inevitable that we were going to hook up at some point along the dusty old trail.
Well, how fortunate we are that you managed to do that. I love it. Is there anything else, Patrick?
Let's see here. A couple of really nice comments. Lynn says, "You've done your job. I want to read this."
Way to go, Lynn.
Yeah. Marie says, "As an Olympic athletic trainer, I'm really enjoying hearing about your daughter's team, an inspired idea for a thriller. There are a number of horse riders and trainers who are weighing in. One is asking, Mr. Patterson, how much horse riding have you done?"
None.
None?
Zero. I think I was a child. I think I rode a pony once. Our son, we have a picture of our when he was a little kid, and he's on a pony and I'm right by him. And he's such a little, he's so careful. He's got one hand holding onto the saddle and the other hand is holding onto me. So, I guess we're not going to, it's not a horse riding family.
Patrick, there's a famous horse riding story involving me in the Lupica family. We were on at a dude ranch out in Colorado and out in a field one day, and my horse took off, and it is the position of my wife and daughter that at that moment I sounded like Dolly Parton as I.
Well, you survived. That's the key part.
Yeah. Let's see, another teacher, Helene, I think is the name. What inspired Mr. Patterson to write I, Funny and the follow-up novels? And the setting, Brooklyn, Coney Island. My students would love to know what inspired him.
I was a little frustrated, you know, writing a lot, you know, Alice Cross and some of those books because they're not funny. And, when you're chasing serial killers, it becomes a little difficult to work the humor in. But I like writing humorous stuff. And so the idea of writing about a kid, and if you put I Funny on the title, you know, the book better be kind of funny. And I love the idea of writing a book that kids could read and realize what it takes if you have a passion for something. And what happens in that book is the kid, he wants to be a stand-up comedian. As it turns out, he can't be one. But so he studies every stand-up comedian, all the routines and everything, and then he starts writing his own material. And that's the kind of thing you need to do if you want to succeed. I mean, I'm sure Mike, you know, wrote column after column after column up in school, and I did the same thing, short stories, a million short stories, and that's what has to happen if you're going to succeed, or for the most people anyway.
Let's see here. Yeah, we have a couple of questions or just comments about.
Well, ask two at the same time. That'd be so cool because there are two of us and it'd be great.
I'll just truncate them all. Yeah. A lot of them are just like are thanking both of you for helping them get through the last couple of years, you know, with your work. And that's something we hear a lot from you know, people that are watching our programs, just sure. How much books have meant to them during this period. So that's basically the gist of it.
And that's one of the only good things about COVID. I mean, a lot of people got back to reading, which is useful.
And that's what got you to write the autobiography, right? I mean, that's what made you finally decide to write it, right?
That's exactly what happened. And I just started writing. It's just story after story after story. It's not the usual kind of autobiography. And I wrote, you know, a dozen of these stories. And with these stories are pretty cool. And I just kept going.
It's interesting, Jim, that some authors have really been productive and I won't say inspired, but, you know, have felt free to pursue things they might not have
if
business were as usual. But we've talked to other writers who've been really paralyzed by COVID. And, it's so interesting that it's had different effects. I mean, We've looked at some of the behavior of people and realized that in all pandemics, there's always this element of people going crazy. It's just been a really interesting reset, and I'm fascinated to figure out how we're all going to come out of it.
My growing up was just move on, chop wood. And so that would be my instinctive thing would be, you know, just keep going, and some people do get paralyzed by, they can't separate themselves from, I've always been, you know, if I can't do anything about it, I'm not going to sit here and spend my life worrying about it. I can't solve certain things. So I just move on. If I can help, I help. Like, you know, like with getting kids reading and stuff like that. If I can do anything, I'm there. If I can't, I'm not going to worry about it.
Barbara, I've written more in the last 2 years than I have at any other point in my life. I'm so blessed that I could come up here every day and do something that I've always loved to do.
This is at least our sixth or seventh conversation with you in the last 2 years, you know, which is more than we ever had in the preceding, 30 that we've been in business.
Right.
So I've loved that we've gotten to spend time with people that, with authors and with customers and had feedback and reach places and all that never would have happened without Zoom. Zoom came along at just the right moment. I mean, that's really been a miraculous technology that's helped us get through all of this.
Yeah, I think. That's so true.
Has there been any Hollywood interest? I'm sure there has in a film or a TV adaptation of this.
Yeah, it's with somebody now. It's you always hope out there. You never know what's going to happen out there. I would never write a Hollywood novel, but if I did, I have the first line. Hello, I lied. So we'll see what happens. I'm hopeful.
I do have.
There's a lot of action on the Dolly novel. I'll tell you that. That's insane.
I'll bet.
There were 70 offers. We still haven't announced, but we're going to announce soon. It's going to be in a great place.
Wow, it's fantastic. Jenny, I want to give her. She's asked a number of times about. She says, I love both authors and I want them to know I'm a huge fan and have read everything they've ever written and would like to know how to get an autographed photo from them. I'm sure we can probably figure out a way to make that happen.
Through the publishers, I guess, Mike. I don't know.
We got to go somewhere and sign books on Saturday. So maybe somebody can take our picture and,
Definitely an autographed book plate. Yeah, we will have those.
Patrick, we can all work that out because if someone's that interested in having it, we'll figure out a way to get it to them.
Yeah. Okay, Jenny.
So send us. She wants a picture of Mike.
Well, wait. What do you say? I mean, that's a hurtful comment. And Barbara, isn't that a hurtful comment?
I didn't hear it. I'm going to pass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll let it go then. Yeah.
Let's see here. Boy, I think that's about it. I mean, there are just a lot of people chiming in to say how much they appreciate your time this evening and how much they love your books.
Well, thank you guys men and women for listening and probably have to go watch some football, right, Mike?
Yes, that was great scheduling tonight, Barbara. I know you didn't plan it that way, but now Jim and I don't have to miss a play of Georgia-Alabama.
Well, we're still experiencing the heartbreak of the Cardinals yesterday here. So
they're in the playoffs. They'll be fine. They'll be fine.
They're fine. You're in the playoffs. How'd you like to be the poor Chargers after that that epic game last night?
Yeah. Or anybody in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Or New York. How'd you like to be a Giants Jets?
Well, let's face it. There's always heartbreak at the end of the NFL regular season. It just depends on where you are. It's really been a pleasure to see you both.
Thank you so much for spending
time with us. Thank you, Aaron, for arranging this and your team at Hachette. And here we are. And let me remind you that the two authors have together signed.
And it is a book. It's not, but
What did I do? Turn it the wrong way?
No, I love that. Yeah, that's right.
There we go. This is a wonderful book.
Thank you so much.
One of the great things about it is you can give it to any reader. You know, you can buy it for yourself, but this is a story that has an enormous appeal to any reader. So I really urge you to think about Valentine's Day is coming up, for example. Now that we've passed Christmas, we're almost at February 14th. So give that a thought. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Barbara, thank you.
Good night, guys. Happy New Year to everybody. Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.